on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and I'll be with you on this Wednesday, November 26th, 2025. Now, this is not an ordinary Wednesday. No, indeed. In my opinion, it is the best Wednesday of the year, the day before Thanksgiving. I can already taste the food, feel the pain from tasting too much food, and imagine what it's going to be like sitting around the table with friends, with family, with loved ones. But just because tomorrow is a day of rest, a day of relaxation, for I hope most, if not all of you, that's tomorrow. Today, we have work to do. And so, our objective here today is the same as it is each and every day, to leave a better and more informed investor. We want to help you understand market dynamics. We want to help you understand how all of this affects your portfolios. And so, to that end, we have, once again, a mixture of educational items, actionable material to go over. But the most important part of this show is you. So before we get to running down those show topics, before we talk about the market today, let's answer this caller question now.
Hello, InvestTalk. I'm calling in a question on Prologis. The symbol is PLD. And wanted to get your opinion and thoughts on getting in. Would this be a good time? And what would be a good entry point? Thanks for your show, and I'll be listening for the answer.
Prologis, ticker PLD, is a global logistics real estate company. It is organized as a REIT, so it owns and operates properties for industrial use, properties for distribution. That's a pretty large company, $122 billion market cap company. It's had a bit of a rough couple years, and that 2024 is down about 20.7%, down even 21.5% more than the overall industry. And REITs were having a tough time last year. Now, this year is a completely different story. REITs tend to do better when either rates are low because investors are seeking that income from REITs and they can't get it from treasuries, from bonds, or when the path of rates is starting to shift towards rate cuts. And that's what we saw this year, right? That's why it's up 21.2% this year, up 21.8% more than its industry. Revenue up a lot in the past 5 years, 19.7% on an annualized basis, from $3.3 billion to $8.1 billion. Net income up from $1.5 billion to $2.6 billion. And its valuation's pretty reasonable compared to where it's been. Price to funds from operation, which is a good way to value REITs and companies like this, trade about 20.9 times. Now, recently, there's been a bit of strength because of very strong leasing and logistics demand. In Q3, they reported raising funds from operation by over 4.2%, driven by that tight supply in those high barrier warehouse markets. They also have a pretty attractive dividend. You know, it was sitting in the mid twos for most of the past 5 years. It's in at 3.5% last year, 3.2% this year. And so all the dynamics that can drive REITs higher, and particularly this type of company, they kind of exist here. This is a large cash generating business, free cash flow, $3 billion. Sits in a pretty good position relative to its dividend, sitting at a relatively decent valuation compared to where it has been historically, and honestly in a pretty decent spot. So if you're looking for a REIT, if you're looking to get some of that exposure, to get some yield, this is a good way to go about it. That is Prologis Inc., ticker PLD. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes, about 45 minutes or so before we head off into the Thanksgiving weekend. And it all starts with my main focus point about a little-known investor named Warren Buffett and his $382 billion cash pile. So we'll talk about that cash, about the concepts of what he generally thinks about of when investing in, and what we as investors can gather from a pile that large. Also touch on the Fed's repo tool, which has historically been used as a way to calm markets by providing short-term funding and liquidity, and why it's being tested right now. A lot of stress in the system. Also, AI is changing shopping. So what is that really going to mean for U.S. retailers and how they are reaching a segment via not their brick and mortars, but online? Should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on trading activity, really flooding the market with, frankly, riskier and riskier casino-like bets, and what role Robinhood has had in that trend. We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on Bright Minds Biosciences, ticker DRUG, and another on Barrick Mining Corporation, ticker B, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel, and of course, hopefully some live calls throughout the show. Now we're headed into a break. It is our first break. It is a short break. I just want to mention as well the upcoming Wealth webinar on November 9th. But before that happens, I recommend that you look at our new comprehensive 2025 Q4 Economic and Market Outlook Report. It's a free read. It's posted now at investtalk.com. My phone lines are open, waiting for you at 888-99-CHART.
The prosperous future you envision for yourself and your family will not happen without strategic planning and definitive action.
Let's go to Brian in San Mateo looking at Roku.
And I wanted your take on the technical picture.
For the unprepared investor, market volatility around the world demonstrates risk, but opportunities wait for no one. And now may be the best time in years to invest wisely, to invest strategically.
What I would do is keep saving and look for other opportunities.
But how can you decide what sectors to avoid, which stocks to buy, and what might be the best price point?
I'm new to investing, and my friend Wesley recommended your podcast a year ago.
The next decisive step on your path to financial freedom begins with a Spotify search for InvestTalk. Listen live or download the free podcast.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks closing a bit higher in what could best be described as, pretty quiet trading session, which tends to happen as you head into a long weekend such as what we see this week. Nevertheless, Dow was up 67 basis points on the day. S&P 500 up 69, NASDAQ up 82, Russell 2000 up 82 as well. After today, the S&P has now rose for four straight sessions on pace for a weekly gain of more than 3%. Big tech mostly higher. NVIDIA recouping some of yesterday's slide on the news that Google might be a hotter than expected competitor. High beta, momentum names, most shorted names, retail favorites among the best performers on the day, as well as investment banks, large cap banks, apparel, and retailers. Frankly, looking at it here, not a lot of groups were in the red really at all whatsoever, so we'll call it relative underperformers. That included software, medtech, pharma, regional banks, and media. Treasuries, bit mixed. You did see some curve flattening across the board. Dollar index down 10 basis points on the day, and gold finished up 60, while crude oil ended up 1.2%. The big story, I would say the big story was momentum outperformance. You had a recent sell-off. You had a big reversal of some of this week's price action from your AI losers of the week. But The AI story remains complicated, and trading remains pretty mixed, pretty choppy within those AI-linked names. Stocks also continuing its recent bounce that has been driven in part by, you know, rising December rate cut expectations, following some of the dovish Fed speak that we saw not just today, but previously in the week. Outside of the Fed and outside of AI, there are a couple other bullish pieces. Obviously, seasonality is playing into it here. You have a bit cleaner positioning than you've had heading into the final weeks of the year, a favorable fiscal impulse, particularly in the first half of next year, and pretty broad earnings growth across the board. Look at all the macro data. Initial claims printed at 216,000 for the week ending the 22nd of November. That's better than the consensus, which was 230, and better than the prior week's upwardly revised number of 222. Continuing claims came in at 1.96 million, a bit below the consensus of 1.964, but at the same time, higher than the downwardly revised 1.953 of last week. Other important data, September durable goods order headline up 50 basis points month over month. Core capital goods up 90 basis points month over month. PMI printed at 36.3, well below the 42.5 consensus. And the news Fed Beige Book has been observing economic activity, little change in most districts, but they are noting prices are starting to rise moderately and labor demand a bit weaker. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, the market will be closed for the Thanksgiving holiday on Thursday. There will be a market half day on Friday for equities, though there is no data set to be released for the rest of the week. And the Fed will be going into its quiet period this weekend ahead of the December 10th FOMC decision. The probability of a December rate cut has now pushed above 80%. Let's keep things moving and play another listener question from 888-99-CHART.
Hello, my name is Carol from Oakland. I've been looking at a ticker, DRUG, Drug, Bright Minds Biosciences. Is this a good time to buy? I've been watching it and waiting for it to pull back, but it just keeps going up. If you could look at the fundamentals, appreciate it very much. I love your program. Thank you.
All right, let's take a look at this right here. When a name has a ticker like drug, sometimes this thinks I'm searching for the drug industry, but we got it here. It is Bright Minds Biosciences. It is a biotech company, and they focus on developing novel therapies, mainly receptor-related therapies, targeting epilepsy, targeting pain. Think about neurological issues, psychiatric conditions. That is what this company does. Now, market cap, pretty small. So this is a pretty small company, right? Market cap, about $726 million. Looks like revenue growth is nothing. It is a Canadian company. They don't make money. They don't generate revenue. They are in the money losing stage. And they IPO'd back in the beginning of 2021. A lot of people at home, a lot of people throwing money into the market, a lot of capital out there trying to find a place to go to. And it's been a stair step downward until about the end of 2024, the price shot back up to pretty much where it was when it IPO'd, and now it's kind of been flat. Now, year to date, because of the timing of this, it's up 77.87%, up 62% over the past 52 weeks, so certainly better than flat. Now, I'm not sure why. Actually, I can see it right here. A bit of pipeline momentum, clinical stage progress. With any type of name that is a early developing treatment biotech name, when you get the progress from successful clinical trials, maybe not to the point where you can put it in market, but you know, they're at the point where, okay, these high risk, high reward things in the pipeline are starting to show some signs of life. And that's great. Certainly, if you had held on to this name and you decided at the middle of 2024 that you liked it, you'd be up pretty big right now, pretty crazily big right now. But now you're at a point where you had the big news, you had the massive, massive pop from 164 to 91 Canadian dollars. And so it started to kind of just ease off here. And until you have additional news about these drugs, until you have the plan to bring them to market, anything could happen. This is a high, high risk name. Typically, we advise and we, you know, our clients, and we like to stress to our listeners that it's really risky investing in names that not only don't make money, but are pre-revenue. So for DRUG, Bright Minds Biosciences, gonna have to pass. Thanks for the call. Moving to new breaks, so to come, my main focus point, more answers to your questions, and hopefully some live calls. So give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Get ready for an all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar. Year-end Tax Toolkit, RMD Planning, Tax Loss Harvesting, and Deferral Strategies. It's all happening online and free of charge. The new Wealth Webinar, Tuesday, December 9th from 11 a.m. to 12 noon Pacific Time. Pre-register now at InvestTalk.com.
Warren Buffett, he's got a lot of cash, a huge, massive, gargantuan, gigantic pile of cash. And it's been growing. It's about $381.7 billion now, which raises some eyebrows and certainly raises some questions about what kind of move requires that kind of dry powder. In fact, it is now the largest corporate cash position in American history, bigger than the GDP of several developed nations, which gives Berkshire an unmatched level of, let's say, optionality, depending on how they want to use it. Now, holding this much cash is pretty unusual, right? In an economy where capital typically seeks returns, so it signals something that is both deliberate and possibly strategic, rather than accidentally building up $380 billion. Now, Buffett has long said he refuses to buy anything that doesn't meet his standards for value, which means this pile reflects years of saying no far more than any single bold decision. And that discipline also tells us something about how Berkshire views the pricing environment in equities and, frankly, in private markets right now. It hints that opportunities just have not been very attractive, certainly not attractive enough for Buffett to deploy this pile of cash at scale without compromising long-term returns expectations. Now, Berkshire has also been benefiting from higher yields, as we all have on short-term treasuries. That means that letting cash sit is no longer as financially painful from an opportunity cost perspective as it was in the mid-2010s when we lived in a zero-rate world. Earning meaningful interest while waiting kind of amplifies the power of patience, a strategy that Buffett has historically used before making major moves. Now, at the same time, a pile this large can't sit forever, which suggests that Berkshire is preparing for a moment when prices are finally aligned with, from their perspective, intrinsic value. And investors are now watching whether that moment will come from market volatility, from distressed opportunities, or from a shift in interest rate expectations. Now, Buffett is known for stepping in when others are fearful. Recall the amount of money he invested in Bank of America during the 2008 financial crisis. So periods of stress often become entry points for Berkshire's largest deals. Now, that record cash position, therefore, kind of signals not caution alone, but readiness for a transformative acquisition or a series of large investments. It also puts Berkshire in a rare category, a buyer capable of effectively writing checks large enough to stabilize an entire industry if it needed to. Now, because of this, understandably, market participants have begun thinking about whether sectors under pressure, like regional banks, like real estate, like cyclical industries, could become targets. Others think Berkshire may wait for a broad market pullback rather than focusing on any single struggling sector. And Buffett has also been historically, you know, favoring companies with durable cash flows, strong brands, and conservative balance sheets, which narrows the field of potential candidates. Given Berkshire's size, small and mid-cap opportunities are effectively off the table, which concentrates attention on some of these mega-cap names that could absorb billions and billions of dollars. But Buffett has also repeatedly warned investors not to expect huge, frequent blockbuster acquisitions because prices just might not be compelling. Now, that tension between an enormous, gigantic, whatever word you want to use, pile of cash, and limited qualifying opportunities is exactly what makes today's setup so fascinating. Berkshire's patience has often preceded major market turning points, which adds weight to the question of what signal the firm might be sending indirectly. Investors recognize that Buffett's decision tends to be long-term, unemotional, so the record cash level may reflect structural overvaluation in today's market. Now, it may also reflect uncertainty around inflation trajectories, future consumer demand, global growth patterns, which makes near-term commitments less attractive. And with geopolitical risks elevated, holding liquidity gives Berkshire a unique ability to respond rapidly to any unforeseen events. Now, this flexibility is one of Berkshire's competitive advantages and a reason many shareholders trust the strategy despite short-term underdeployment. The cash pile could also lead to increased share repurchases if Buffett concludes Berkshire itself is the best opportunity available. Buybacks have been a consistent tool for Berkshire when its stock trades below intrinsic value, and the current cash level strengthens that option. Investors wondering, well, what happens next, are really asking when Buffett will see the kind of asymmetric opportunity that meets his standards, whether it's a major acquisition, a wave of buybacks, or a market dislocation that prompts rapid deployment. Berkshire's kind of positioned for that action. Now, for now, the message is patience, discipline, readiness, and a combination that has defined Buffett's most successful moves for decades. So, as we head into 2026, when the Oracle of Omaha will no longer be at the helm, certainly seeing what Berkshire decides to do through its new leadership team, how it decides to deploy this cash, if and when it decides to do that, will be something we will all be waiting and watching for. Tomorrow, Thanksgiving Day, and also on Friday, we will run compilation shows. It's what we call a Best of Caller Questions podcast. So look for that to be posted on investtalk.com as well as other platforms. Remember, the InvestTalk downloads are free, and now my phone lines are open at 888-99-CHART.
Rain or shine, there's always value in the InvestTalk podcast. 888-99-CHART.
Happy Thanksgiving, InvestTalk. Thank you, as always, for the great shows. Steve from St. Paul. I am trying to increase my financial sector holdings. I've only got a few holdings, all about 1%, so about 4% total. Kind of a mix of sizes and domestic and international. One of my domestic names is HGBL. It's a very small company. The fundamentals look good, but the technicals are terrible. And every time I think it starts to recover, it starts declining again. So I'm wondering if I should give up on this one and try other options. Also, if I could slip in a second part to this question, what do you think of Tokio Marine, TKOMY, as a insurance name? I don't have any exposure to Japan. Thanks as always.
Great question. And so HGBL, let's start with that one, is Heritage Global Inc. The caller did mention it is a very small company, and he wasn't lying. $47 million market cap. What they do is it is an asset services company. They acquire, value, liquidate, resell, and offer secured lending for financial and industrial assets. Now, they've had a bit of elevated liquidation and auction demand, which tends to happen when there's some sort of economic stress. But, I mean, funding costs for businesses that are this small can be incredibly, incredibly, incredibly stressful. And that's one of the reasons why it's down 33.5% in 2024, down 28.1% this year alone. From a technical perspective, again, not lying, does not look great. So, it is a small cap. It is deeply, deeply, deeply cyclical, high volatility, high risk. It could deliver outsized returns if liquidation mandates and asset resale cycles pick up favorably, but the market's signaling to you that that's not necessarily the case right now. And so I would probably look to move away from these smaller names that have some of those funding issues, those cost issues, and more into an established name. Now, the second one, which is TKOMY, pull that up here, lost my mouse. It happens from time to time. TKOMY is Tokyo Marine Holdings. It is an ADR. It is giving you exposure to the Japanese market, but also U.S. market as well. 49% of its business is Japan, 33% is the United States. Certainly a bigger company, about $66 billion, right? Far, far bigger. I'm sorry, $66 billion. So a far bigger company. A lot more net interest income, right? $6.3 billion in net interest income, which has been growing, you know, pretty decently over the past couple years, with the exception of this year. It is falling a little bit. From a relative valuation perspective, it's about where it has been over the past 5 years in terms of averages, but they have some pretty strong underwriting growth in the most recent quarter. So Q2 results were pretty solid. Capital returns have been pretty decent as well. I mean, you have a dividend that's been floating anywhere from the low twos to the high threes over the past 5-6 years. So if I had to choose between the two of these, certainly I think that this would be more beneficial here. It represents a more relatively stable, dividend-inclined, larger insurance conglomerate that gives you some of that international exposure. It is down this year, but it is outperforming its industry by a little bit. So if you're choosing between these two, certainly TKOMY would be my vote. Thanks for the call. Let's keep things rolling and add another question now.
Hello, InvestTalk. This is Yannick from Denmark. I would like to ask you about the stock MKL, Marco Co. Well, I was interested in this stock. Would like to hear your opinion. Thank you very much. Bye.
MKL is the ticker. So let's pull this up right here. And it is Markle Group, Inc. It is headquartered in the state of Virginia, and it's a financial holding company that does underwriting for specialty insurance products in some pretty niche markets. So they got reinsurance, they have market ventures, which relates to controlling interests in diverse portfolios of businesses. Kind of very niche area of the insurance space. About 45% of their business comes from that insurance segment, 31% from market ventures, 17% from investing. Now, year to date, it's up about 20.63%, up 17.27% over the past 52 weeks. Pretty large company, right? $26 billion market cap company, decent growth in net earned interest, decent growth in net income, decent growth in earnings per share, and it's trading at a pretty reasonable valuation here. About 1.5 times is where it's trading right now, about where it's been over the past couple years. Now, one thing I want to take a look at here is, well, has there been any interesting news that has driven this price action over the past 52 weeks, right? You're seeing relative strength peak back up from a pretty rough 20 to 2022. Really seeing anything that's giving, you know, outside of the normal course of action, right? You're seeing strong underwriting results. You're seeing positive results from their investment portfolio as interest rates have remained relatively high because they can't take on as much risk as an insurance company as you or I could. Now, could that come down a bit, right? As rates have been falling, it certainly could. But if you want a more conservatively managed investment portfolio, I think that this is a pretty reasonable way to go about it. That is Markel Group, ticker MKL. Let's go to Will from San Diego. Has a question about BMY.
That's correct. Yeah, I've been looking at it for a while, and I'm wondering if now is a good time to pick it up.
Sure. Let's take a look at ticker BMY, which is Bristol Myers Squibb. It is a global biopharma company, so they develop and market oncological, immunological, and cardiovascular related medicines and therapies. Year to date, it's down 12.92%, down 16.16% over the past 52 weeks. Pretty big company, $101 billion market cap company. And it's seen its revenue grow pretty substantially from 2019, but it hit a peak in 2021 and it's kind of fallen. Oh, I'm sorry, 2024. And it's fallen back down a little bit, from $48 billion to $47 billion. Net income, it lost money in 2024. It's projected to make money this year. It's some pretty substantially improved margins. But if you pull that back and you ignore interest, taxes, depreciation on its assets, its EBITDA margin has actually been falling pretty steadily since 2021. So that's certainly something we don't want to see and could be the reason why it's trading at a price to earnings of about 8.1, which is below where it's been over the past 5 years on average, right? It's traded about 8.6. Now, they have had some pretty strong momentum from their commercial segment recently in the past 3 months, right? About 4.32% is how it's performed. And there's some pipeline optimism as well. But from a momentum perspective, from a technical perspective, and really what I'm seeing within their margins and margin compression, I'm not really signaling that now is a big turnaround time. You're not seeing high volume. You're not seeing any short-term catalyst that can really push it forward. And that being said, right, you also have a hold rating as a consensus rating from analysts. So I would keep it on my watch list for now. I don't think now is exactly the time you want to get in here. Hopefully things turn around soon. That is Bristol Myers Squibb Company, ticker BMY. This is InvestTalk, now with more than 62 million downloads. Our work continues in 30 seconds, so hang on.
The Thanksgiving holiday is here, and while you're enjoying family, friends, and great food, you might want to think about attending the new free wealth webinar. The title is Year-End Tax Toolkit, RMD Planning, Tax Loss Harvesting, and Deferral Strategies. And it's happening online Tuesday, December 9th from 11 a.m. to 12 noon. That's right, an all-new wealth webinar. Pre-register now at investtalk.com.
The Federal Reserve is trying to convince banks to use a key lending tool. It's called the Standing Repo Facility, but uptake has been pretty slow and frankly a lot slower than policymakers have hoped. Banks have tapped this facility more in the past month, but many remain hesitant, worried that, okay, it's a bit of a stigma and how borrowing from the Fed might be perceived by the overall market. You actually had this issue back in 2008. One of the reasons why, when they were bailing out companies, they made every bank take money because they didn't want to signal to the market which ones were strong, which ones were weak. Now, the SRF, that lending facility, is designed to let banks quickly convert treasuries into overnight cash. It gives them a cheaper alternative when repo rates spike and helps the Fed keep short-term markets stable. Now, despite that safety valve, repo rates have jumped several times, and really in fall alone. And the facility is about to be tested again as large treasury auctions settle and put fresh pressures into funding markets. The Fed paused its balance sheet runoff on December of last year, it is set to pause its runoff on December, which should ease some of the strain, but analysts warn volatility could remain elevated if banks stay reluctant to use this facility. Former New York Fed officials have said recent usage is encouraging, but its main tool still shows limitations, especially when stress emerges in the treasury-backed funding system. Investors and central bankers watch this repo market pretty closely because it anchors financing across Wall Street and ultimately shapes borrowing costs for households and businesses. When these rates break, when they break sharply above the Fed's target range, monetary policy itself can become less effective. And that's a signal that the bank, especially now, the central bank really wants to avoid. Yet, at a private meeting this month, some banks told New York Fed President John Williams they fear the SRF carries the same stigma as the discount window, since borrowing data becomes public after 2 years. Others have said that tapping the SRF ties up balance sheet resources they would much rather use to serve clients, creating an internal trade-off that reduces willingness to rely on the tool. And some Fed governors have thought of different ideas, floated raising the SRF interest rate to discourage routine borrowing, a suggestion that some people believe could worsen the stigma problem and frankly does not help address the issue that is core. Policymakers are discussing further tweaks, including adjustments to how and when the bank can lock in borrowing as they try to fine-tune the plumbing of the financial system before volatility picks up again at year-end. Understanding these types of dynamics, right? Understanding what structurally underlines markets is as critical to becoming a more educated investor as paying attention to the day's news. Let's keep things moving and play another caller question now.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Longtime listener to your show for many, many years here from the Midwest. I was listening the other day and you spoke to a caller about mid-caps. And I have one here. I was wondering what your thoughts were on this one. VOE. I've done a little research. That looks to be a pretty good mid-cap value fund also. Would you guys agree with that? And also I have some extra money because I'm getting rid of some losses here on the year to do some, I guess, washing or whatever. Not washing, but just tax loss. And I'm thinking of putting some money back in Netflix because it has such a monopoly. And since they've done the split, the price is pretty down right now. And I think it could maybe grow up to 500 or 1,000 again someday. Would you feel that's a smart idea also? Thank you. I look forward to hearing your thoughts on this on the show. Happy holidays.
Let's take the first question first, and hopefully we have time to answer the second one as well. Now, VOE is the Vanguard Midcap Value ETF. It focuses on midcaps, and guess what? Focuses on value names. So it's passively managed, tries to provide this exposure. It looks like its investable universe is the MSCI USA Midcap Value Index. Now, judging value can mean different things to different people. So how does this fund do it? It looks at price to book, looks at forward earnings to price, it looks at historical earnings to price, dividend to price ratios, and various metrics. Year to date, it's performed pretty well relative to its benchmark index, the MSCI USA Midcap Value, of about 10.03% on NAV basis, up about 10% price. Now, the hallmark of a Vanguard fund is, well, it tends to be passive, which this is. It also tends to be cheap. 7 basis points is its expense ratio, which is why it's attracted $19 billion in funding to attack this asset class. So the next question is, how good of a job is it doing? Well, its dividend yield is 2.24%, higher than its segment benchmark. Its price to book is lower. Its price to cash flow, about the same. Price to earnings, a little bit lower. Price to sales, a little bit lower. With these metrics being lower, you know that it's tilting towards the value side of the market. But it also is tilting towards some of those larger names, so it may be less representative of mid-caps than you might think, right? The weighted average market cap here is $40 billion versus $27 billion for the benchmark. And therein lies the you can't just look at the performance. You have to understand, are you actually getting what you are paying for? And if you're paying for a mid-cap fund, you're not really getting that here. 99.58% of this portfolio is actually large caps. And then it is understandable why it is outperforming a mid-cap benchmark. Taking a look at these names, you're seeing names like Newmont Corporation, Corning, General Motors. Those are some of the larger names in this portfolio. But I would say if you're looking for a value fund, this is a pretty decent way to go about getting that exposure. But it does tilt towards the larger side. So if you're looking for purely mid-caps, you might want to look a little bit elsewhere. Thanks for the call. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after our final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
'25 rolls on, and you might have some fresh questions for Justin or Luke. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, InvestTalk. This is Mark in Alaska. I had a question about Barrick Mining, ticker symbol B. I hold it in my Roth, had a pretty good run-up. I've over doubled my money. But since it's in my Roth, I'm only about 31 years old. I'm wondering what your thoughts were for a long-term hold, say, 20 years or so. Wondering what your thoughts were. Really appreciate the show. Thanks.
That's a great question. You know, Barrick Gold is a leading gold mining company. So they produce, they sell it. They also have exposure to copper, various other metals as well. But it's been doing well because gold has been doing well. Year to date, up 158.23%, up 133.13% over the past 52 weeks. Revenue growing from $17.7 to $22.5 billion. Net income growing from $2.9 to $5.3 billion. Margins, phenomenal. You know, we do hold this for clients, but you know, you got to understand there's a bit of volatility here, right? Because the value of this company, the price of this company is going to be really predicated upon the commodities it's exposed to. In this case, pretty heavy exposure to gold, pretty heavy exposure to copper. Now, holding in your Roth, I mean, that's perfectly reasonable to hold a company like this in your Roth. Look at the historical returns of something like gold. So, you know, in this market, in this economy, in this world with rising geopolitical tensions, I think that the factors that have driven gold higher will continue to drive it higher into the future. Thanks for the call. Before we head off, I want to talk a little bit about big retailers and how they're spending pretty heavily this holiday season. But the target isn't just shoppers anymore. It is AI agents that increasingly influence what people buy. With more than $350 billion in U.S. online sales expected, companies know most purchases start with a search. And more people are leaving Google behind and using AI as a search tool. ChatGPT, Gemini can describe products, compare prices, and even enable purchases directly inside the chatbot, making them a new kind of digital storefront and assistant. And this shift has triggered an explosion of content creation, with brands racing from a handful of monthly blog posts to hundreds designed specifically to surface in AI recommendations. This new game is generative engine optimization, where firms like Evertune AI charge thousands per month to make brands more visible to AI models instead of traditional search algorithms. And because companies can't directly advertise inside most major AI tools, they're trying different methods, posting more on Reddit, building AI-only websites, stacking product reviews wherever scrapers can find them. Right now, the actual traffic coming from AI platforms, it's less than 1% for giants like Amazon and Walmart. But retailers say those visits, they come with more higher intent to buy. Some brands are already crafting influencer campaigns specifically designed to be read by AI scrapers, hoping that transcripts and awards and reviews will give their products an edge in chatbot suggestions. Others are buying ads based on questions consumers ask AI assistants like Amazon's Alexa, effectively advertising to the machines that guide shoppers. You know how Google's rolling out new AI shopping tools that track prices, surface product details, and weigh store quality features that only work if realistically fed clean data into the system comes from these retailers directly. ChatGPT is also stepping deeper into commerce with new features like comparing products, finding lookalike items, blurring the lines between chatbot and shopping assistant. All of this is to say, right, will this be successful as a strategy? Who knows? Will the models be able to decipher the intent of some of this content in the future? Who knows? But regardless, these things are not just proliferating throughout retail. It is a clear sign that although the productivity gains haven't necessarily manifested themselves, although the profits of the hyperscalers haven't necessarily manifested, these tools are fundamentally changing the way companies are getting their products to consumers. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which you can get at iTunes and Spotify. While you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. If today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirements, and whether it's all really working together, Justin and I would love to speak with you. At KPP Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring a little bit of clarity and confidence. Just head over to investtalk.com and click the portfolio review button. One last quick reminder, our newest InvestTalk Wealth webinar is set for Tuesday, December 9th. And we're going to be talking all about ways that you can lower your tax bill. That's just under 2 weeks away. It's happening online and it's free, but you got to pre-register at investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your holiday.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.